Presented by Tom Service.
It is indeed, yes, welcome to the Royal Albert Hall, and a sight and sounds you will never have experienced before. We're going to hear tonight Havergal O'Brien's record-breaking, epic, gargantuan, monumental, superlative-inducing First Symphony, The Gothic, performed by more than 1,000 musicians. There are about 800 singers on stage this evening, the combined power of no fewer than 9 choirs. There's an orchestra of 200 players, a super orchestra really from the fused forces of the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and the BBC Concert Orchestra. There are 4 offstage brass bands, there's a trumpet group meters above me somewhere in the gods of the Royal Albert Hall, and there are 4 vocal soloists. And I'm right in the middle of it all. Usually, our Radio 3 presenter's box is just above the first violinist's, but not tonight. That gigantic orchestra has spread out into the arena. There's a children's choir and the 20 or so brass players of the groups 3 and 4 to my right. To my left, going all the way up into the rafters of the Royal Albert Hall, are the singers of this once-in-a-lifetime hyper choir. So what on earth is Brian's Gothic Symphony? Well, it's the first of 32 symphonies that Brian composed in his remarkable life, a life that began in the era of Brahms and Liszt and ended after men had gone to the moon. Born in Dresden, Staffordshire, that is, in 1876, he died in 1972. Now, Brian only heard the Gothic Symphony in a professional performance once, when it was played in the Royal Albert Hall in 1966, conducted by Adrian Boult, who controlled his forces with a megaphone as well as a specially extended baton. And the Gothic is as grand, imposing, terrifying, intimate, and ravishing as any Gothic cathedral. Written between 1919 and 1927, the piece is a two-part journey into the darkest realms of the human psyche. Its music racked by the experience of war and Brian's own personal emotional trauma, but it tries to create a vision of hope by fusing the whole of music history into a grand sonic edifice. So the symphony takes in medieval plain chant and Wagnerian harmony, Tudor-style polyphony and Mahlerian marches, Baroque invention and modernist dissonance, among other things. The first part is a 40-minute three-movement sequence for orchestra alone, but all that's a mere upbeat for part two, an hour-long setting of the Latin Te Deum, music as gilded and complex as Mahler's Eighth Symphony, but of even greater ambition and scope. Tonight's conductor is Martin Brabins. No megaphone this evening, I promise, as he leads only the 6th complete performance in the Gothic's history. Now, its reputation as one of orchestral music's mythical behemoths is the most that many of us will have known about the Gothic Symphony before tonight, that is. But there's more to the music than its mere enormity. Here's Martin Brabins.
What's remarkable about the Gothic is not only the gargantuan scale of the thing, but actually it's the details. It's like visiting a great Gothic cathedral and you see all this wonderful carving that stone carvers took years to finish, each individual carving, and yet there's one particularly taxing solo for the xylophone in the third section in the scherzo before the chorus begin, and it's, you know, that moment in a sense, that whole scherzo, it's almost malevolent. It's, you know, it's something about it that's, we're being plunged into the abyss, and then the sunshine comes out again at the beginning of the Te Deum and man is redeemed with this wonderful choral symphony, a paean to joy and positive music making. It's really quite an extraordinary journey, this piece.
Martin Brabins. And so the choristers that Martin Brabins will be conducting tonight, well, the 800 come from the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra Youth Chorus, Eltham College Boys Choir, Southend Boys and Girls Choir, the Bach Choir, the BBC National Chorus of Wales, the Brighton Festival Chorus, Cor Cerdiedd from Wales, the Huddersfield Choral Society and the London Symphony Chorus. The soloists tonight, soprano Susan Britton, mezzo Christine Rice, tenor Peter Alty and bass Alistair Miles. So here on stage at the Royal Albert Hall is Martin Brabins to conduct the BBC National Orchestra Wales and the BBC Concert Orchestra Havergal O'Brien's Gothic Symphony.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Whoever strives with all his might, that man we can redeem. The quotation from Goethe's Faust on the title page of Havergal O'Brien's Gothic Symphony, which you've just heard in that truly epic performance here at the Royal Albert Hall. And in that performance, the striving of more than 1,000 performers, an 800-strong choir, 4 soloists, 4 offstage bands, and an orchestra of 200. The combined forces of the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and the BBC Concert Orchestra, and all of them conducted by Martin Brabbins. A gigantic reception from this full Albert Hall, Royal Albert Hall, for that performance. Havergal O'Brien's reputation, he's been neglected, it's been felt, in the decades since his death, but a performance like that and this sort of reception surely is a vindication for this epic symphony, the most massive, the most monumental ever composed. Huge applause for the soloists. Coming on stage, soprano Susan Britton, mezzo-soprano Christine Rice, tenor Peter Alting, and bass Alistair Miles. And applause too from the choirs themselves, this huge assemblage of singers. It was made from the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra Youth Chorus, Eltham College Boys Choir, Southend Boys and Girls Choir, the Bach Choir, the BBC National Chorus of Wales, the Brighton Festival Chorus, Cor Cadiaeth from Wales, the Huddersfield Choral Society, and last, but by no means least, the London Symphony Chorus. The chorus masters, 2 of them, that huge choir was sort of split into 2 during the final stages of rehearsal at Alexandra Palace, and here at the Royal Albert Hall were Joseph Cullen and Adrian Partington. And that gigantic orchestra was led by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales' leader, Leslie Hatfield. David Good was the organist. Martin Brabbins now bringing the youth choirs to their feet to whoops from the audience. Off stage, brass bands. You know, there was more than 60 brass players in that performance you've just heard. 20 percussionists, one of them playing an instrument you will have heard near the end and towards the end of the 5th movement, the Eudex. It looked like a gigantic red-painted, letterbox red-painted tombola. It was an instrument specially made for this performance, a thunderer filled with gigantic rocks that when it was turned made the elemental sounds that crowned those violent climaxes towards the end of the symphony. I'm sure that sort of performance, that sort of atmosphere, which I'm sure you can sense at home too, has whetted your appetite to know more about Havergal O'Brien. Remember, there are 31 other symphonies that he wrote apart from this one. That was just the first. It is, though, the longest. Check out the Havergal O'Brien Society's homepage, havergalobrien.org, for more information. And log on to bbc.co.uk/proms for online programme notes, information about our daily music guide podcast, and to share your thoughts on what you just heard and witnessed. Don't wait for the critics. Give us your reviews and comments on this epic concert and any of the other proms you've heard. All that, as well as the previous proms, available to listen, of course, on the proms homepage, bbc.co.uk/proms. Stamping of feet, standing ovation here at the Royal Albert Hall for Havergal O'Brien's Gothic Symphony. Martin Brabbins bringing the soloists on stage. The applause just getting louder and louder. I feel like the whole hall has been on this dark but somehow life-affirming journey with all of these 1,000 performers. Almost as if a wee listeners and you at home too were really part of this performance, not just passive witnesses to it. Well, as Martin Brabbins brings the chorus masters, Joseph Cullen and Adrian Partington, and indeed the chorus masters of the youth choirs you heard tonight, Alistair Tye, Julian Wilkins and Roger Humphrey, to their feet. A tumult of applause. That's it for tonight's prom. Tomorrow night's prom, I'm going to have to go some to top this, I have to tell you, is the Orchestra Philharmonique de Radio France, conducted by Myung Woon Chun. You're going to hear music by Beethoven, the Triple Concerto, Messiaen's Les Offrandes oubliées, and a new piece by Pascal Dussopin. Don't forget there's a lunchtime prom tomorrow as well. BBC Radio 3 new generation artists, harpsichordist Mahan S. Fahani playing Bach's epic Goldberg variations. Not, though, quite as epic as Havok O'Brien's Gothic Symphony. And so, with the cosmic reverberations of Havok O'Brien ringing through the applause here at the Royal Albert Hall, it's time to hand you back to Broadcasting House and Andrew Lyle.
Thank you very much indeed, Tom. And if my review is worth anything, I absolutely loved it. Thanks too to the Radio 3 production team at the Royal Albert Hall, and perhaps special mention to Hugh Thomas, the balance engineer, marshalling those extraordinary forces for the microphone. Perhaps that should be marshalling the microphones for those extraordinary forces. Anyway, if you want to hear Havok O'Brien's Gothic Symphony again, then tonight's Proms performance is being broadcast on Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3. Well, I've got a distant memory of that 1966 performance conducted by Sir Adrian Bolt that Tom mentioned earlier in the evening. It's now very much a fading teenage memory, so it's good to hear the Gothic again this evening. Let's hope it's not another 45 years until someone has the courage to put it on one more time. Well, I've been reading John Ruskin's long essay on the nature of Gothic from his three-volume The Stones of Venice, published in the mid-1850s. He identifies six characteristic or moral elements of Gothic, placed in the order of their importance. 1, savageness. 2, changefulness. 3, naturalism. 4, grotesqueness. 5, rigidity. 6, redundance. These characters, says Ruskin, are here expressed as belonging to the building. As belonging to the builder, they'd be expressed thus: savageness or rudeness, love of change, love of nature, disturbed imagination, obstinacy, generosity. And I repeat that the withdrawal of any one or any two will not at once destroy the Gothic character of a building, but the removal of a majority of them will. Well, here's a little bit more about what he says about love of change. We must note carefully what a distinction there is between a healthy and a diseased love of change. For as it was in healthy love of change that Gothic architecture rose, it was partly in consequence of diseased love of change that it was destroyed. In order to understand this clearly, it will be necessary to consider the different ways in which change and monotony are presented to us in nature, both having their use, like darkness and light, and the one incapable of being enjoyed without the other, change being most delightful after some prolongation of monotony, as light appears more brilliant after the eyes have been for some time closed. I believe that the true relations of monotony and change may be most simply understood by observing them in music. We may therein notice, first, that there is a sublimity and majesty in monotony, which there is not in rapid or frequent variation. This is true throughout all nature. The greater part of the sublimity of the sea depends on its monotony, so also that of desolate moor and mountain scenery, and especially the sublimity of motion, as in the quiet, unchanged fall and rise of an engine beam. So also there is sublimity in darkness, which there is not in light. Again, monotony after a certain time, or beyond a certain degree, becomes either uninteresting or intolerable, and the musician is obliged to break it in one or two ways. Either while the air or passage is perpetually repeated, its notes are variously enriched and harmonised, or else, after a certain number of repeated passages, an entirely new passage is introduced, which is more or less delightful according to the length of the previous monotony. Nature, of course, uses both these kinds of variation perpetually. The sea waves, resembling each other in general mass, but none like its brother in minor diversions and curves, are a monotony of the first kind. The great plain, broken by an emergent rock or clump of trees, is a monotony of the second. Farther, in order to the enjoyment of the change in either case, a certain degree of patience is required from the hearer or observer. In the first case, he must be satisfied to endure with patience the recurrence of the great masses of sound or form, and to seek for entertainment in a careful watchfulness of the minor details. In the second case, he must bear patiently the infliction of the monotony for some moments, in order to feel the full refreshment of the change. This is true even of the shortest musical passage in which the element of monotony is employed. In cases of more majestic monotony, the patience required is so considerable that it becomes a kind of pain, a price paid for the future pleasure. Again, the talent of the composer is not in the monotony, but in the changes. He may show feeling and taste by his use of monotony in certain places or degrees, that's to say, by his various employment of it, but it is always in the new arrangement or invention that his intellect is shown, and not in the monotony which relieves it. Lastly, if the pleasure of change be too often repeated, it ceases to be delightful, for then change itself becomes monotonous, and we are driven to seek delight in extreme and fantastic degrees of it. This is the diseased love of change of which we have above spoken. The thoughts of John Ruskin, or some thoughts of John Ruskin on the nature of Gothic, some of it, I think, applicable perhaps to Avogal Brian's Gothic Symphony, although it could not be described as monotonous. Well, after the gargantuan experience of Brian's Gothic Symphony, here's music on a more modest scale, but also inspired by the medieval past. The Canadian pianist Yves Egoyan plays the Four Ogives by Erik Satie. Thank you. the Canadian pianist Yves Egoyan playing the four ogives, or ogives, by Eric Satie. An ogive is a Gothic arch, and I promise you that's the last Gothic reference I'm going to play to you this evening. Meanwhile, here's Norman Lebrecht.
It's proms time, and that means the Lebrecht interview, where top performers tell it as it really is. First up, Semyon Bychkov, the high-octane conductor who insists he's not a control freak.
How precise do you think were the great, great creators in what they did? Unbelievably precise. They knew exactly what they wanted. If we are to serve them, we can't afford any less precision, we can't afford any less devotion, we can't afford any less preparation and curiosity. If it was so difficult for Beethoven to compose a symphony, why should it be easy for us to perform it?
On the Lebrecht interview, after tomorrow's prom, on BBC Radio 3.
Ugo Orlandi was the mandolin soloist in that final movement from the Concerto RV425 by Vivaldi, with I Solisti Veneti, directed by Claudio Scimone. You're listening to BBC Radio 3, it's 9:15. Now another chance to hear a drama from the Radio 3 series which showcases cutting-edge contemporary new writing, The Wire. Tonight, a story of one man's obsession with capturing a sound which may prove the existence of an elusive presence beyond our own. Rapture Frequency by Abby Spallman.
It's like a totally different type of Buddhism, mate.
Uh-huh. Rewind that back, Steve.
It's called Dashon in Nigiri. No, hang on, that's a sushi roll, isn't it? Dashon in Nigirin, I think. Yeah, that's it. What's it? It's a search for the Lotus Sutra.
I just need the last bit.
Oh, just before the silence?
Just before the silence.
Weird when they're silent, isn't it? If I'd be silent, I think I'd be screaming.
No, that's not very Zen.
No.
22nd of March, 15:30 hours, black box analysis, Pan Am flight 465, Heathrow to San Francisco. So, anyway, the Lotus what?
Yeah, there are like 10 steps to enlightenment. There's like 1, hell, 2, hunger, 3, animality, 4, anger, 5, tranquility.
I get the picture, and where are you at now?
I'm not going to continue this conversation.
Ah, come on, Steve, it's the same every week. One trip to Gwent and a field full of magic mushrooms and you're anybody's for a free set of flip-flops and a falafel. It's all a con, mate. All religion is a con. Did you rewind?
Yes, Christ.
Don't you mean Buddha?
Bugger off.
I don't know, mate. Displaying a bit of number 4 there.
Okay. Okay, if you're so smart, here's the thing. Right here in the wreckage of this plane, they found that little old lady unscathed. Even you have to admit it's a bit of... What's that then?
It's a freak occurrence. It's not a miracle. It's not some higher being. It's not the hand of God or Maradona or anything.
Everyone else died.
Exactly, you plum. Everyone else died. Some God that. Little old lady's found and everyone screams, miracle. 275 passengers, including 7 kids, die agonising deaths. But that, oh, that'll be him up there and is moving in mysterious ways, won't it? The friggin' Ministry of Celestial Funny Walks.
Okay, okay.
John Cleese in a cassock.
All right.
No, play the recording, Steve. Let us heroes good work. Actually, let me. Hey, Deepak Chopra, have you messed with this? It sounds different.
No.
What was that?
How the hell should I know?
Did you touch something?
Oh, that was you.
Some kind of joke?
I never touched it. That was you. I think it was on the wrong channel.
It's probably some interference. Shadow recording. Look, the end bit. Play the thing again. Here. Noise. Transference.
Maddest sound and white noise I've ever heard.
Just stop, Steve-O, just stop.
Or maybe we should tell someone.
Why?
That was weird. Don't you think it was weird?
It was just electrical, something.
Michael, maybe it was...
What? Steve? Maybe it was what?
I don't know. It was beautiful. Maybe it was something like... something celestial up there. You don't know.
Celestial? Steve, look, put the flip-flops down and move away, OK? It's nothing. White noise, OK?
No, all those people terrified, then they're calm. Why?
Dry up, Steve. I'm going for a fag.
You don't know what that was?
God, it was so beautiful.
Look, just what if... Look at that, you see?
No, but I'm trying to eat.
A guy found the face of Jesus in his burrito in Santa Barbara.
The National Enquirer. Can you sit somewhere else?
It's a ringer, mate. Look, look, look. Holy guacamole, that.
Steve, I would like you to go.
I'm just saying. What do you think that was?
I've already told you what I think it is. No, I'm just trying to finish a Danish and a cup of...
I think we just heard something. I do. Just imagine, right, what we just heard. It's evidence, Mike.
Ah, do me a favour.
It's evidence of the presence of... something. Jesus, Mike, that's enormous. I mean, what if, like, we've been chosen? You know, like this bloke's refried beans, and you're... We're just gonna ignore it? I mean, look at this guy.
You want to be in the National Enquirer?
No, but I am gonna follow this up. I'm gonna find out what that was. I'm gonna try and get it back.
You do that, Steve. Oh, and look... I just find Mother Teresa doing the breaststroke in my latte.
So what did he think it was? Aliens?
I think he was having a flashback. He used to do a lot of acid.
I really think he meant some sort of, I don't know, angels or something. Well, it was indescribably beautiful and weird. It was, what?
Nothing.
What?
I think you were being had. A joke. My guess is they're all in the pub now, Steve-O and the lads from work.
A joke? No, Gina, no. Whatever it wasn't a joke. Some sort of interference, yeah, but I'm not thick. Do you remember the recording we heard? At the museum last year, the Lasca Strati? Well, it was like that. Only a city full of them, but not human. Like, stop laughing. Whatever it wasn't manufactured by a techie. I think I'd know.
I hardly think when him up there chooses to launch his heavenly host remix to the world, is going to use you as a channel.
I'm not saying he would use me. Why wouldn't he use me? What's wrong with me?
Hello, I'm God. And this week, Matthew, I'm going to ignore all my priests and nuns and Bono's a bit busy. So instead, I'm going to channel myself through Michael Shortall, an atheist from Belfast, and his assistant, Steve, a man who goes by the nickname Bongface.
Stop laughing at me.
And who once rolled and smoked an entire spring cabbage.
You weren't there, I was. There's no need to.
Oh, come on. Well, this is just a joke, right? Michael?
I'm going to bed. You spoil it, Gina. You always do.
What the? Who's there? What's going on? What is this?
If passengers want to turn on a light, there's a switch just above your head.
What the hell? Where am I?
Ah, yes. It's a bit of a shock, no? This is what a plane looks like when it separates, Michael.
I'm strapped in, but I can see sky. Oh, my God. The people around me are...
This is what it's like when a bomb blows a hole in the wall. But don't worry. You are comfortable?
Comfortable?
We should hit the ground in a couple of minutes.
Who are you? And them, who are they?
I am Captain Robert Desailles. And this? Well, these are all the passengers and crew who have ever... who you have ever worked with, so to speak.
Please return your seat to the upright position.
This... is Susie.
And brace yourselves for an emergency landing. Mayday, mayday, mayday.
Yeah, of course it is. You're a dead pilot, and this is a dream. I've obviously eaten something organic. This is work stress.
Oh, what's that noise?
I'd like to wake up now, please.
Oh, can't you hear it? It's just right here.
Behold, Michael. The messengers of the Supreme Divine. Ministers of succor at the hour most dark. Malaika, Melak, Adonai, Metatron, and Azrael, the Angel of Death.
This is just something I learnt at school. This is all it's...
Behold those who know the baseness of your being. You are naked before us, Michael. Exposed to us like a child.
What?
Those who have seen the fetid wishes and baseness of human frailty. What you crave, Michael, as you lie in your bed at night. Thoughts that would horrify. Weaknesses. Terrors. Under your skin, the flash of thought. The stain of loathing cannot be hidden from us.
Get away from me! Who are you? Get away!
But through all this, there is still a love, Michael. There is still forgiveness. Through all this, and with the knowledge of all this, all craven inner wants and hatreds and rage, there is and there will be, at the hour of your death, a time for you, Michael. A time for your gentle, guiding passage through.
You're a dream! Some sort of upbringing, throwback. I'm gonna wake up right now. Wake up! Wake up!
Brace yourself, Michael. We are going down, my friend.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Oh.
Hello? Steve, slow down.
Lift. Not working.
Yeah, no, maintenance company's rubbish.
Whoa. Well, this place is theatrical.
Yeah, sorry about the mess. It's just sound gear stuff I've collected over the years.
What's this?
Don't touch that.
Right, okay, calm down. Steve, you okay? Your eyes look a bit whacked out.
Yeah, why wouldn't I be okay? Hey, hey, listen to this.
Who's that, Steve?
That's my Uncle Derek.
Derek?
Yeah, Mum's side of the family keeps quiet, cart, bit of an odd bloke. Sort of intense, you know?
I think I do, yeah.
Did you hear that? That's death roll. It was close, I was close. In fact, if my Auntie Ellen hadn't walked in...
Steve, what did you do?
Oh, Michael, come on. I recorded him, didn't I? I went round to his house. He's been given weeks to live.
You recorded a man while he was lying, dying? Steve?
She walked in with a tray of sandwiches. Tray went clatter like in a film.
Steve? That's appalling. Oh, my God, the poor woman.
I'll work it out. Right, when we're close to the end, that's when they'll come. They come at the time of death for the passing. Don't you get it? That's what it is.
Who will come? Are you on one, Steve?
You heard the thing. You can't say you didn't.
Yes, Steve, I did. I heard the thing, whatever it was.
Like a hand on a shoulder, Mike. Like a breath in an ear. Just think what that could mean. The comfort that would bring to the world, just if we, Michael, you and me, we found that at the very last minute of your life, that there's someone there to help you pass through.
Look, this is way too weird.
Weird? Weird? This is much more than just weird. This is bigger than Galileo. This is a manifestation of evidence. This is a direct message from the emissaries of a divine being. Just think of the consequences. This could bring about the unification of the world. This could end war and suffering and everything. And me, I'm a channel. I've been chosen as a channel and you. Well, my being a channel is tempered by you and your doubts. I'm the channel and you're the...
What am I?
Oh, you're important too. You are. Look, I made recordings of stuff from work and I'll put it all on a loop, yeah?
Why am I important too? Steve, turn this off. It's nuts.
Oh, I know. I know what this is, Michael. I knew this would happen.
Why don't you just sit down? You're swearing, mate.
You can't just take all the glory, Michael.
Steve, calm down, mate. Just calm down.
Do you know what this is?
Yeah, I grew up in Belfast, Steve.
Yeah.
I do know what it is.
I am the chosen, Michael. And you are the witness. This isn't about you. This would never be about you. I mean, thank you for your support and everything, but you don't even believe. Michael! Can you hear them, Michael? Can you hear them now?
Steve, what are you doing? You can't point that thing at people.
I am an emissary. I can do whatever I like. Those are people out there!
You could have shot that man.
I was aiming for that man. It's okay, I'm recording.
You're recording? Steve, put the gun down.
Please move away from me. You're a foulness in my head. Do you know how long I've waited for something like this? For you? I mean, my God, what an ego. As if anyone would channel through you. Oh, Mike, I feel sorry for you. You. You really need to open your bloody heart.
Michael, I am Detective Jack Rennie, and this is...
And Father Brian Malvena.
What's he doing here?
Oh, he's just here to help. Now, Michael, you say you received a phone call from the deceased, Steve Slack, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I don't want a priest, I want a lawyer. Am I under arrest?
Calm down, Michael, this is just a chat. Now, you went to his flat, and after a conversation and a rifle discharge, you were seen wrestling with Mr. Slack on the edge of a balcony, which resulted in him falling to his death.
I was trying to stop him, but I let him go.
Stop him from what?
I don't know. I couldn't hold...
Just went mad, did he? Fruit Loop, did a Britney?
Yeah.
Did he have a history of that? Was that his thing?
I didn't know him that well. I only knew him at work.
Father Brian here knew him. Well, did you know that?
I run a scheme for... He used to take a lot of drugs.
Father Brian spoke to Steve for a very long time yesterday, and Steve says something to Father Brian here about hearing the sound of... What was it, Father?
I'm not too sure as it goes.
Shut up! I don't need any help from you.
Now, that's a bit extreme. Are you an extremist, Michael? You seem very angry to me.
I just don't like priests. You scratch any ex-Christian Brother schoolboy and you'll get the same reaction.
I see. So you know nothing about this sound. Father, wasn't there something about... angels?
Michael, sometimes people can believe they've witnessed something.
Someone tried to wipe Stephen's hard drive before we arrived. Was that you, son?
No.
You were in the flat as we got there. A witness saw you downstairs talking to the victim as he died, and then you ran back up to the flat. Plenty of time to wipe a hard drive. And someone emailed an MP3 from that computer, too, just before we arrived.
I didn't send anything. You can check my account.
We will. And your work one, to be sure.
Michael, it's possible that you believe you experienced something, something you can't figure out, something maybe of a divine nature. And I think it may have left you unbalanced. There are examples of people who have experienced what they call a state of rapture.
Oh, here we go. It's caudology, R.
This state of rapture emanates from the actual experiencing, or alternatively, the belief that one has experienced a visitation or the manifestation of the spirit or spirits.
So whatever I heard, it's your opinion that it wasn't real.
It's very unlikely that it was real, Michael.
Well, isn't that just marvellous? And is that the opinion of the entire Catholic Church or just you? Did you get the Pope and the blower, Father?
Michael, I'm here to help you. You could be a danger to yourself.
No, that's the problem. When you lot start to deny things, it makes me all the more curious. And what about Steve? He heard it too. Or is there such a thing as multi-rapture? Two for the price of one?
Okay, boys, if I may butt in. Now, I don't care if you've been visited by God, or the Bishop of Bath, or Desmond Buggering Tutu. You were found at a crime scene. Now, some witnesses might have seen you wrestling with an armed man and call you a hero. And those witnesses are your best friends right now, so I'm obliged to let you go. Now, that doesn't please me, but I have nothing on you, so why don't you really be an angel and lose yourself somewhere? And son, if I ever see your face again, I will bring down a wrath on you you might never get over.
Hey, what are you sending me stuff in my email for?
Oh, sorry, Debbie, I had to. My account's been hacked.
Here, I put it on a CD, and don't worry, I didn't listen to it, but it's some sort of audio porn for black box geeks.
Yeah. Thanks, Debbie. Okay, Steve. You've got one last chance, mate.
I mean, my God, what an ego!
Sorry, Uncle Derek. You have to go.
You really need to open your bloody heart.
Okay, Steve. Nothing so far. Nothing, you see? Stupid bloody idiot. You stupid... Bloody hell. Steve. Oh, God. Gina! Wait till you hear. You won't believe this.
Where the hell are you? The police called and... I'm really worried, Michael. Look, the nursing agency rang and I've been called in. I'm at the hospice. I'm just going in now.
Jesus Christ. Gina, what did you say you were?
I'm at the hospice on Stoke Street. Michael? Mike?
Okay, okay. This is Michael Shorthall at 1100 hours, 23rd of March. Jeez, Steve, what have you got me into? Okay, recording number one, subject. Subject, rapture thing. I'm in the vicinity of Stoke Street, Hospice for the Dying, attempting to record to prove wrong that smug bastard priest for a start. And for you, Steve, because I should. Well, mate, I'll let you go. Okay. I'm at the rear of the building. Can't risk questions at the front door, though. Seems to be a door here. It won't. There's a window. Bloody hell. We're in. I'm in the bowels of the place. Can't chance the lift. I need to find stairs. Ah, here. Seems to be some sort of airwaves or frequency thing. If it's a recording, then why is it only heard sporadically? And why did we lose the first one? What am I even doing? I don't know. Perhaps this is a start, perhaps. Jesus. How many steps are there? But even if I do get something, what are the chances it'll play again? I need to find the same frequency. Is that it? Find the same channel and... God, this is so... No wonder Steve went nuts. Sorry, mate. All right, sideboard. Oh, sorry. Wrong, Okay, family in there. Let's try this one. This is... Subject is female. Late 70s. Dying. Alone. This is sad, but could be fruitful. Approaching bed. This is pitiful, this woman. There's no cards, nothing. There's no evidence, family, anything. I'm compelled to touch, to hold her hand. Shit! She moved. Michael, don't be an idiot! What's your name, love? God, have you no one at all? Her skin is like rice paper. Her fingernails are blue. Okay, I don't know how long, but I'd better go before... She grabbed my hand.
I'm not afraid.
Oh, my...
I'm not afraid.
It's okay, Mrs. Williams, I'm here. Michael!
What the hell were you doing there?
I wanted to see you.
That's just a load of shit. Why did I walk into a side ward and see...
I was just holding her hand. She was alone.
The police told me Steve's dead. And you were there.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. I watched him. I should have...
Is any of this to do with that stupid bloody noise?
It's not stupid, Gina. It's not. That's the thing, love.
What are you doing?
Just listen. Just listen. To hold her hand. Shit.
Is that...
She moved.
Holding her hand?
Idiot.
Oh, you sick bastard.
No, listen. Him, love. Must be here. Somewhere.
You know at all.
I don't believe I'm hearing this. Talk about a violation. I could lose my job.
There must be something. I heard it on my phone.
On your phone? Oh, Michael, you need help.
But I heard it. I did. I don't believe it either, but I did. I mean, maybe if I play around with it. But Gina, it's like it's teasing. It comes and goes, playing with me. Well, when it does record, insignificant, like a breath, it could be anything. People probably hear it every day and don't even
register.
You're
babbling now. Actually starting to frighten me.
No, if I can just get one proper recording. But what if that's the catch? What if it won't ever let me?
It? Michael, this is nuts. Probably some sort of PTSD or something. Now, Steve's death...
It's an elusive little...
You're scaring me. If you think I'm going to hang around and watch this crap, you've another thing coming. You know, I'm serious, Mike. You're not right in the head.
You leave me?
You've recorded one of my patients. Just think about that.
I don't want to be alone, like her. I was so sad.
Right then. Easy one. I want you to promise me you'll stop this recording bloody whatever, that you'll go and see a therapist. I'll recommend one.
A therapist?
Will you? Or am I getting on a bus?
Of course. Anything you want.
You will?
I mean, what am I thinking? It must be PTSD.
Are you lying to me? I'm not in the mood, mate.
No, I promise you, I'm not. I mean, I'd be crazy to lose you. End up all alone. I'll see someone immediately and I'll stop all this, I promise. God, I'm an idiot. What would I do without you?
Yeah, well, exactly.
What would I do, Gina, if you were ever to leave me?
Too right.
There. It's over. It's finished. Now.
Whew. This is Michael Shorthall. Recording attempt number 76. I'm approaching on foot an accident on Highbury Street near the market after interception of news on police radio. It's a stabbing. Fresh. Yeah, I'm almost certain it's a stabbing. I am approaching the scene of said possible, but hopefully not quite yet, fatal stabbing. We are surrounded by... Well, you can hear that. Oh, there he is. Lying on the ground. One male, Caucasian, 22, maybe younger. Has on his tracky bottoms, runners, and the type of jumper junkies must get for Christmas. Oh! That was close. Cops. D.S. Bloody Rennie. Okay. Next to the victim, there's a shop doorway. Sex shop or something. I can just... I'm in the doorway. I don't think anyone saw me. Damn, I just don't think I'm close enough. Paramedics are here. Oh, well, I have to turn that off. That's just... How the hell am I supposed to... Thank you. Right. I'm gonna get down. On my belly. On the porch here. Oh, what? What is that under my... Oh, mother of God. That's just... Oh, someone should write to the council. Oh, no, forget that. I'm just inching closer. I can get the microphone. Please. What?
One, two,
there it is.
Three, four.
There it is.
One.
Now, come on.
Three.
Something decent, please. Substantial. No more teasing. Lucky number 76. Come on, my son. Go on.
Stay with me, mate. Stay with me now.
Why not?
Don't.
Why? I just don't understand. Don't take him away. Not now. Not... no. Don't. No. Oh. I have to...
Michael? Michael Shorthall? Is that you?
Detective. Yeah, fancy that.
Fancy that, eh, Michael? Michael, do you mind me asking you just what the hell you're doing here? In there, actually, in there?
Oh, nothing. Nothing of a service, just passing.
Is that a bloody microphone?
Oh, yeah, this, it's just a present. Look, like I have
What's
to...
that on your shoes?
I don't know. Shite. I stood in shite.
Well, why don't you come back to the station with me? We can get you all cleaned up.
No, I couldn't possibly. I couldn't take up your time.
No, it's all right, Michael. It's no bother at all. In fact, we deal with all sorts of shite in that place. Now. That's an interesting iPod selection you have, Michael. Very impressive indeed.
No Father Brown this time? What, just me and you?
Cozy.
Would you mind telling me why I'm here?
I thought you and I had a little deal going on, Michael.
I've done nothing wrong.
I thought the last time you were here, I told you I was letting you go, didn't I? And you were to go home, mind your own business, and I was never to see your daft little face again. Wasn't that the case? Answer me.
Yes, you did.
Thank you. And there I am last night, at a crime scene, And I turn round to scratch my arse, and who pops out from lovely Leslie's erotic emporium doorway with, of all things, a microphone? Only you! And not minding his own business, Michael. Not minding his own business at all.
I was just... I would like to speak to a lawyer.
Now, why would you want to speak to a lawyer? Why would you come out with the likes of that? Now, that starts me thinking about the last time I bumped into you. And funnily enough, wasn't that another crime scene?
That wasn't a crime scene. That was an accident.
When we establish that, we'll let you know. But what I'm trying to say here is, don't you find that to be a bit of a coincidence?
Yes. That's all it is. I've done nothing wrong.
So why do you want a lawyer then? You're not under arrest, are you? Are you under arrest?
It was just a coincidence.
Oh, calm down, mate. Relax. We're here just listening to your sounds. I mean, I'm a Beatles man myself, but this is right bloody catchy. And then I read a few of these. There are a few reports, Michael, of a bloke who fits your description who's been making a nuisance of himself. We've got hospices, hospitals...
Those are public access.
Yeah, they're public access if you're visiting or if you're sick. And I mean physically sick, not in the way I'm seriously beginning to believe you are. They are not public access if you've a microphone in your hand and you're caught creeping round trying to record people who are about to... My father passed away 3 weeks ago.
I wasn't doing any harm. I didn't mean any...
Is he on here? Is he? You sick, dirty... Have you any idea of the pain? No, Michael. You haven't done anything wrong apart from maybe a minor trespassing charge, but you have violated... My dear God, people's rights and dignity at the most. Oh, I really hope that never happens to you, you creepy, genuinely twisted...
I was trying to help people just like your father.
What the hell do you know about my father?
Nothing, I swear. Please.
Is he on here? Is he? You son of a...
No!
How do you know? Did you take names?
No, I'm sorry, truly, I am.
Okay, let's just get off that subject, or it won't be you needing a lawyer. Now, you'll be glad to hear I don't actually think you killed your friend Steve.
Oh, thank... I didn't, I wouldn't...
Shut up! And I don't think you go about randomly stabbing junkies in the East End. But I do think, and let me make myself clear, I do think... You are an abomination. So let me put this plainly. I don't even have to try and pin these deaths on you. All I have to do is judge you an extremist. Understand? And we have laws against extremists, and the tools to deal with extremists are in place, whatever the cause or the religion. So if I smell you within a hair's breadth of me, or a family, or a dying... I will make it my own personal quest to put you away. Could be 28 days, or however long I decide to recommend. Because I can do that, Michael, in these times of... these interesting times.
You can't do that. You can't. I have rights.
And that, my friend, is why you haven't had a lawyer.
Michael, what are you doing? Stop this! Calm down!
It's a really good idea if I get rid of all this. Gina, give me your phone.
Oh, you can bugger off.
Trust me, Gina, give me your phone.
It's an iPhone, Michael. You'll have to break my arm. That's a £2,000 laptop! That's my £2,000 laptop!
There might be something on it. I can't take any chances. I'm thinking anything with a memory. I don't know what else to do. If he gets a warrant...
Who? Why would anyone be getting a warrant?
That detective Rennie. Gina, he threatened me. Told me he put me away as an extremist. 28 days for a start. He said tools were in place.
Why is he going to put you away?
His father died. He thinks I have him on something. I have seriously pissed this man
Michael,
off.
Michael, are you making this up?
You don't believe me?
Well, it's a bit fanciful. 28 days, no?
Look, it doesn't matter if you don't believe me, but all this, it's got to stop. All this is over, Gina.
All this is going to stop.
Yeah, well, that's great, Michael, and about time. But could you put that down? Or he's got a big Nintendo fan as well. Michael!
Maybe I do need to go and see a doctor. You were right. It's perfectly reasonable that Steve and I could have been suffering delusions at the same time. Job's stressful. We listen to people dying all day. I'm so tired.
Look, why don't you just go to bed? Whatever it is, it'll all look better in the morning.
Or maybe... maybe it's just a kind of computer virus, you know? I never thought of that before.
That's possible. Yeah, that's what it is.
Well, that's it. Some sort of stupid computer virus made up by some geek in a bedsit. That's it. It's all a joke. Gina, I'm so sorry for getting you into this.
You haven't got me into anything. Now there, just lie down.
But I still have to get rid of all that. A hard drive can be rescued from anything. Nobody knows that better than me.
Tomorrow, we can get someone to collect it and take it to the dump.
No, no, don't do that. Let me destroy it myself.
Sure, Michael, I will. Now just... that's it. Now.
I never meant to do any harm, Gina, you know. I felt I owed Steve. He fell.
I know.
I think it's just stress, Gina, or a virus. A virus in me, or a virus in that. I feel much better now.
Now, see? Get some sleep, and you'll be fine.
Oh, hello, Butterfingers.
Steve! What? What the? No! Not this, please! It's cold and dark. It's dark outside.
Oh, don't be such a girl, Michael. It's bracing. Lovely starry night.
Please place your tray in your upright position.
This is just a dream. God, I'm hurtling.
It's different in the dark, isn't it, Michael? When the plane separates at night.
It wasn't my fault. I couldn't catch you. I couldn't stop you falling. You did it yourself. You went crazy.
What? Oh, yeah, well, I know that now.
No, 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 no more, Steve. This is over. This is over now. I destroyed most of the recording, Steve. I had to. What were we thinking? I promised Gina.
She takes no shit, that one.
Mayday, mayday, mayday.
I don't care if we crash. This is just... it's just a dream.
Oh, we don't crash.